Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, I'm Steph.
And I'm Simon.
And welcome to The Food Fight, where we offer a different perspective on food culture issues around Australia and the world.
We'll talk with chefs, producers, business owners and experts to hear their stories and find out what makes them tick.
This is a Small Bites episode where we chat about how Australia and the UK do food differently. All right, welcome to another episode of the Food Fight podcast. My name's Steph Postuma with Simon Evans.
Hi.
So we're going to film these ones. Don't know whether or not to look at the camera. Simon, we're not supposed to look at the camera. Let's just talk to each other. We're going to start doing some video content now. So fun for all the family, for everyone. And we'll chuck that on our YouTube channel and onto, IGTV and stuff like that.
Apparently the algorithm's much better if you do reels and IGTV.
Right. Okay, so, cool. Well, we want to get more listeners and things like that. So this is our 2021 goals, is starting to do some video content.
Now.
Watches, exactly.
And listeners.
It's all about the watches.
We'll take you all.
We want to addict people to the food fight, like they're addicted to their phones, and just stop them from enjoying the other things in life. Contributing to the content emporium that is Instagram and the internet.
And YouTubes.
All right. That's enough of that. We decided that today we're going to talk about the differences between food and food culture in the UK and Australia. It's going to be a short, snappy Small Bite segment, and we were just then talking about what Simon had for breakfast to get the levels on the mics, and he said that he had a tartine, which is, what the fuck's a tartine?
Well, it's like an open sandwich. It's like a single piece of bread with the filling just on top. Right. It's something my dad used to make. He didn't obviously know it was a tartine at the time. He just thought it was a slice of bread with a bit of ham on top.
Right.
Later in life, I learned it was a tartine, but it's just one of my little favorite snacks.
So just because you don't have another piece of bread on top of it, it's no longer a sandwich?
Well, I think like the definition sandwich, I think you need two slices of bread.
You need to have two slices of bread.
Or three.
Or three. Because
The club sandwich.
Well, they've got the open sandwiches in, they've got the smørrebrøds and those types of things in Denmark and Scandinavia and things.
It's a different type of thing. You can still find them.
Can you find, so what, is that like a thing in European food?
No, I think this is literally, I've never seen anyone else do this. Oh. Really, like with ham, like I'm sure people do. It's literally just like a weird Evans family thing that I still do at 33.
Cool.
But sandwiches in general.
So that's your typical breakfast. Ham, cheese, tomato, tartine.
Yeah, it's like more, I'm not really a breakfast kind of guy. Late. Like breakfast would be later anyway with me.
What time do you normally have breakfast?
I normally don't really have breakfast. I go straight to lunch.
Well, what's lunch?
Between like 3 and 6 p.m. my rhythm's all fast.
That's not
like
breakfast.
Yeah, exactly. I'm complete. Mm-hmm. I'll have dinner at like 10 p.m., 11 p.m. Or like, you know, the other night I had dinner at 1 a.m. because I'd been working all night. So
I went to Continental Deli the other day after radio on a Thursday. Shout out to SER Radio. You can listen to me on the Thursday daily now.
Yeah.
9 a.m. till 12 on 2SER 107.3. Man, the sandwiches were so fucking good there at Continental. Yeah. Like, and I love the attention to detail. Like the meatball sandwich, like she just kept on grating that like Parmigiano onto the meatballs and like it just didn't stop and was just like, this is great. Mm. And then the other one that we had was jamon, butter and tomato, and that was it. But it was just like really nice ingredients and nice sea salt on the tomato, good quality butter, really fresh, nice bread. absolutely delicious. There's something in a good sandwich. And for those out there that don't know, I'm a sandwich artist from way back in the day. One of the family businesses was Rolls Choice in Canberra. Shout out to Rolls Choice. My mum started it in Canberra at the beginning of the 90s or the end of the 80s or something, and ended up with five shops doing gourmet sangers around Canberra.
You should do a pop-up.
I know. I want to do a pop-up and bring back the old Rolls Choice menu.
I'll come help.
Yeah.
I'll consult.
Come down. Oh, consult, mate. What do I need? I don't know. We've got the menu. We've got the Jaguar. We've got the Mercedes. We've got the Spitfire. What else we'd put on there? We'd put on the Rolls Royce, of course.
Right. Maybe the Mac. It was all cars.
All the Rolls were named after cars. The bagels were trains. The focaccias were planes. And we had baked spuds too, and they were motorbikes.
That's
the Vespa was the most popular baked spud. That was good, man.
That's amazing.
Shout out to Rolls Choice. Shout out to Canberra, everyone who remembers it.
You don't see many sandwich shops in Australia.
You don't really, do you? Do you see a lot of sandwich shops in the UK?
Well,
you got Prêt à Manger.
Well, even Greggs do great sandwiches, and it's a beloved chain.
Is Greggs a servo?
No, it's like a bakery.
Oh, okay.
Like, so you know, like Baker's Delight here. Imagine that, but with good stuff.
Right, and sandwiches.
So there's sandwiches, good like pastries, sausage rolls, sweet pastries. You can still buy a loaf of bread and stuff. It's just really good and really fucking cheap.
I never knew why Pret never put something in Australia. Like it seems like an almost like a foolproof business idea. Well, for those who don't know, tell us what Pret is for those who don't know.
It's a fancy bakery sandwich shop. Like it's
UK's, but it's all just grab and go.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what it comes under. In the UK, there's a lot of grab and go places.
Yeah.
Even like supermarkets have like a much better range of grab and go stuff and you know, better quality, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's not sure whether that is.
There is a lot of grab and go stuff, isn't there?
Yeah,
and
I think
good.
It is great. I think maybe it is a sort of culture thing where people are a bit more busy and on the go in the UK compared to Australia, where it's a bit more laid back. Because there's much better cafe.
Yeah, people
culture.
Are busier and more on the go.
But that's slightly stereotypical because
it just doesn't mean anything. That's not true.
But there's just more. It's more of that kind of thing. So you just get better sandwiches everywhere.
Yeah, interesting. Okay.
You can't really. But then Pret's a pretty good chain overall. Mm. Like it's quite Spenno.
Yeah. No, it's not. What do you mean? They're like, what? Yeah. Like 2-3 pounds of fucking
sandwich? That was expensive back in the day. But a Greggs was like £1.50 for a nice big chicken sub thing.
Mm, Greggs.
And it was 55. I think it might even still be 55 pence for a sausage roll.
Greggs. Like, shout out to Greggs.
Greggs is great. To the point where the UK government changed like the tax laws to do with like takeaway or hot food or something. And it meant that a Greggs sausage roll was going to go up by like 15 pence. And there was fucking uproar in the country.
Of course there was.
And so they literally changed the tax law to incorporate
to accommodate
whatever it was.
Greggs
basically,
roll.
So it could stay at 55
pence. Unbelievable.
Like that's how beloved they are. One of the many differences in food culture between the UK and Australia.
I reckon we could do a whole episode on sandwiches. But let's move on to other differences in sort of like food availability at like, you know, just simple restaurants. Well, restaurants in general, but like simple stuff. But like one thing that Simon keeps banging on about, audience out there, he won't shut up about
I bang on about a lot of stuff.
Is how he just thinks that the curries that are available in the UK are just overwhelmingly more, better than Australian curries.
They are. Like, so there's... So,
I'll
preface this with sort of Thai, Chinese, Japanese food is way better here.
Right.
I think it basically comes down to immigration and time. Like there was a massive amount of Indian immigration in the 1800s and going back further. And a lot of kind of rich British nobility would bring back Indian cooks, maybe slaves, you could maybe go so far as say. Mm. So there's always been a strong link and a history of British people enjoying Indian food and Indian immigration for a few hundred years. And there's a reason there why the food is kind of better. It still kind of makes no sense why it hasn't, like now with the age of information and we can get all these ingredients and immigration movement is quite easy.
But how traditional though is like Indian and Pakistani and stuff food in the UK as compared to what it is in like regional India? Because the thing that I don't understand is like we have first generation Indians here, like owning restaurants and bringing back their recipes from home. It's not like they've been bastardized by living in Australia for X amount of years and that's why the curry's not as good. Like, so that's where I don't understand.
I think a mix here, it is very westernized curries.
Right.
So when you see, like, you can basically, you go to any Indian restaurant and you know there's going to be a korma, a tikka masala, a butter chicken.
It's like relatively generic.
It's always going to be very generic. And I mean, I guess, like, if there's less Indian restaurants, there's less competition, and that has a kind of spike in quality.
Yeah, interesting.
But the history of Indian food in the UK is kind of quite long now, where, like, tikka masala is a British Indian dish.
Mm.
Like, it's kind of based on, and there is some discussion about, I think it was about 5 or 6 different Indian restaurants in Bradford, which is like Bradford up in the north, which is like the Indian restaurant capital of the UK.
Right.
I think about 5 restaurants there claim they invented it at some point.
Tikka masala.
Yeah, but it is a British dish. It's kind of based on chicken makhani, like a kind of butter chicken. But it is a British thing. It's a dish that has been made by Indian people in the UK. And a couple of years ago, I'm not sure who does this. I keep quoting this, and I can't remember who actually does this list, but they do a top 10 or top 100 favorite foods in the UK, and tikka masala won it like a few times in a row a couple of years ago, and is a British classic.
Mm.
Like, you see it, like Wetherspoons, large pub chain, have like a curry night every Wednesday, and heaps of pubs have curry nights.
Yeah.
Which is generally pretty good quality as well. But that is just an absolute classic British meal. So it's just such a melting pot and an amalgamation of things. That kind of British Indian food is almost its own thing in a sense, obviously with roots Thai. But I mean, like, the first Michelin-starred Indian restaurant was in London.
Yeah, okay.
For example. So even that kind of slightly more elevated cuisine has kind of been based in the UK.
Is there certain dishes and things that you see in the UK that you just don't see here?
You don't see a boona.
What's a boona?
I can't really remember. It's like this is a type of curry. Like, you'd have tikka masala, you'd have your korma, and you have chicken boona.
You don't see a boona.
You don't see a boona. I can't even remember what a boona is, but it almost has... Like,
a boona is a word we used to use for bogans back in Canada when I was growing up. Boonas.
Like, grab a boona is almost like just like a saying. Like, and also there's like... In which we have in the UK, don't seem to have here. In some Indian restaurants, stay up really late, so it's like you go out for your beers, and then at midnight you go to the Indian restaurant and you have a late night curry.
Ooh.
Like that's the thing. Which is
fucking great. Just nothing's ever open late here. It sucks.
Yeah, I mean, cafes close too early.
Yeah. All right. Well, okay. Moving right along, because this is a Small Bites episode and we're going to get into some other stuff. But the other thing that you bang on about all the time ad nauseum, I never fucking stop hearing about it, is how much better Welsh scallops are than Australian scallops.
So you're not knowing this thing. I never said Welsh scallops.
Well, Scottish scallops. Sorry.
Scottish scallops.
My bad.
It's just fact.
So why are they better? What's the difference? Why are they better?
I mean, temperature of the waters.
But are they bigger? Like, are they just bigger, more plump,
they're
bigger
like,
scallops?
Like... They can be, like, I've seen scallops almost like the size of that, the diameter of that glass, like not far
that's,
off that.
That's large.
Yeah, like a big scallop, like maybe not quite as big as that.
Right.
But like almost as big as that.
I wonder if they're a different breed. There must be, right? A different.
Maybe I think it's mainly the temperature. Like, very cold, pure, crisp waters in Scotland. And I imagine there's some sort of salinity. And
surely that, but like off the southern coast of Tassie, we've got some.
I doubt it. Right? It's like fucking real cold in.
Yeah.
And cold.
It's pretty arctic up there, isn't
kind
it?
Kind of cold. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Cold kind of all year round.
Mm.
So there's just, it must be a tweak. But yeah, they're bigger. They're generally transported better. Like, we used to get them air freighted from Isle of Skye in Scotland down to us. And sometimes they'd still be twitching. Like they would like still like. Well, go.
Is that where they grow them off the Isle of Skye?
Yeah, that's where some of the best in the UK are.
I went to the Isle of Skye, did a bit of hiking there, 2019. I don't know if I had scallops. I had langoustines. That's some good langoustines. See, something we don't see much of.
But I mean, saying that, like, Australia has amazing crayfish, shellfish.
Yeah.
Like, you know, marrons, bugs are just awesome.
Mm.
Langoustines are just a big juicy prawn.
Yeah.
Really. But yeah, I mean, marron is just stunning.
Yeah,
like,
we've got a lot.
Ludicrous ingredient.
I think one thing you don't see heaps of it used. You see a bit of it used, but yabby is a pretty cool Aussie thing that we don't see much of.
We used to use yabbies at Kavo quite a lot, but it's hard to get decent yield. and they're quite they're quite expensive for a small tail. A
lot of processing
and
for
then
a small tail.
Right? There's obviously meat in the claw, but it's really hard to get you like. I've very rarely been successfully, maybe this is my technique, but I've tried many different ways to like get the meat out of the claw in kind of one piece.
Yeah, okay.
Like you end up with tweezers just like digging it out.
Mm.
So then, and then you, that's kind of hard to use. So
right.
It's a yield problem. And like there can be some quality issues, but when you get good yabbies.
Let's talk about other seafood differences. Obviously here in Australia, we've got like this huge coastline with a massive diversity of marine ecosystems from tropical right down to like, you know, temperate and fucking just cold down south Tassie and stuff like that. So it's different all around the place. And it's kind of, we've got systems set up where you can get like everything really like decent quality. If you live in a metropolitan area, at least you can get coral trout from the Great Barrier Reef, and you can get, you know, whatever, scallops and abalone from down in Victoria or South Australia and all those sorts of things. Like, it's just a whole different sort of species set, really, isn't it?
That was one of the things when I first moved here was just like learning the names of the fish you can get here.
Yeah.
Like it went from this group of fish, which I knew well, to then, and then even to the point where some fish that has the same name is a different species here compared to there. Like cod.
Snapper and cod
gets used for so many different things.
Cod.
So that was quite difficult because for one, it was learning new names and then learning new techniques. The fish in the UK are all quite samey. So lots of white fish, lots of oily fish, like slime mackerel is pretty well eaten in the UK. Like most restaurants will have mackerel. We just call it mackerel. And it is, it's
a different species of mackerel to blue, like our slimy mackerel, blue mackerel.
Possibly they're very similar.
Yeah, they are quite similar.
I think the quality of what we just call mackerel in UK seems to be a little bit firmer.
Mackerel's like pretty like widely eaten in the UK. Hey,
it's like a popular, like from like gastro pubs to like Michelin star restaurants would have mackerel. like a mackerel dish on.
Yeah,
So
you got a fair bit of flatfish like. Sole, and those sorts of things. And you got, like, I mean, we basically only really here have flounder that I've seen, especially on the south coast.
We were getting some turbot. Turbot. In recently.
Where do they get turbot?
I'm not sure.
I see colder water fish, right?
And it does seem, it's not as, like, turbot, when you take a fillet of turbot in the UK, it is thick.
Yeah.
And to the point where if you just see a fillet, you wouldn't assume it's a flatfish.
Yeah.
But then the turbot we're using here was a lot flat. We used to get these beautiful baby turbots in, kind of like plate size, just real fat by the neck. And they were awesome. Mm. We had flounder on at Bangalay recently, some sand flounder and a different type of flounder. Mm. Things like sole and plaice, John Dory, turbot. Yeah, turbot is seen as, you know, one of the kind of kings of fish.
Yeah.
In the UK,
it's good stuff.
But here, like I'd never used things like cobia, or kingfish in the UK.
The bigger pelagics.
And cobia for me is just probably my favorite fish.
Tell us what you like about cobia.
It's just got such a. It's such a pure. It's got lots of flavor, but it's a very pure flavor.
Yep.
And then just the texture of the meat is so meaty, and but not like something like monkfish, which again you don't see too much here, below in the UK. That has a kind of it's real meaty and quite dense, whereas cobia is just all fat. Mm. So you can cook it really kind of medium rare, and it comes out stunning like that. Or you can have it raw, or you can poach it. It's real versatile. There's heaps of fat on it. We used to make cobia fat mayonnaise, which was delicious.
Oof.
With all the trimmings and offcuts. Just for me, sensational fish.
Nice.
If I moved back home, I would miss using cobia.
Okay.
And I would be in the UK bitching about all the things I couldn't get.
You don't see much of it at the fish shop. I think you see it on menus quite a bit, but like because it comes from sort of up north, a bit further, and see it more on menus than
not that recognized the by the shop. Public.
No,
because I mean the best
they call it black kingfish.
Sort of a
bigger pelagic, firm flesh.
So the best ones are farmed, which makes them more sustainable up in kind of far north Queensland.
Yeah, right.
Hence they have more fat when they're farmed as well.
So we're speaking, maybe we'll make this small bites, just the bloody UK versus Australia seafood chat, off. But let's talk about fish and chips because it's so weird. Like Australia seems to like, you know, we're a coastal dwelling population and love a bit of fish and chips and stuff. But you've got gripes with Australian fish and chips as well, or the consistency. Well, maybe.
To be honest, I think it's more that there's some good fish and chip places in Wollongong, but nothing that is great.
Yeah, okay.
So it's more probably more of a Wollongong problem. I've had some great fish and chips.
Mm.
I think, like, I'm not completely sold on flathead. I'd go as far as saying that flathead is generally the fish of choice for fish and chips here.
I reckon at pubs and stuff, yes, and at restaurant like bistros or whatever. Mm. But I think at fish and chip actual shops, I think that it's still a lot of the time it's hokey and shit like that, or flake.
Yeah,
still and most
flake,
of the time,
flake is a bit.
Not a fan of flake.
No, I've never had a good one anyway.
Yeah, okay.
I
like flake. I reckon flake's fucking good actually.
But I'm not completely sold on whether flathead just seems too thin for me. To really be able to get the batter crispy and have the fish nicely cooked. I can see,
obviously, you haven't come fishing with me, mate.
Well, yeah, get a couple of lizards.
Get a couple of big lizards, mate.
You get the lizards, I'll bring the batter.
I actually caught some on the weekend. Yeah, my boat's going again.
Maybe we should do a fish and chip off or a trial run of different fish and different batters to finally find.
We could do that.
The best one. That'd be pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll get the deep fryer out.
I saw, I don't know. Yeah, we'd have to check up like. But yeah, I think like when it comes to fish and chips here, it's like it is not very often where you get fish and chips from a takeaway shop. I think the takeaway shops let like themselves down in terms of quality on the whole. Like takeaway shops have decent fish and chips a lot of the time, but it's never like this is fucking great fish and chips. Yeah. The chips are crispy, they're golden, they're fluffy in the middle, the batter on the fish is golden and also, firm and thick. And
not many places that make their own chips. Actually, Fig Tree Fish and Chip Shop make their own chips, and I think that makes a world of difference.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Well, to me, that is what fish and chippy shops are like. Not the kind of bought in.
Yeah, sometimes you get like,
the weird golden ones.
The ones that are like yellow. Like
They're a bit straight. Like I don't mind those chips, but I like the proper chippy ones.
Yeah,
but if you want to have good, and you can get great fish and chips, you've got to go somewhere that is, you know, set out to make really good fish and chips. Whereas in the UK, it's kind of a bit better across the board.
When I was, and there's always fish and chips on the menu. I mean, it is a pub staple here as well, but it's sort of like. I don't really order it much at pubs here.
Yeah.
But in the UK, I was ordering fish and chips and it was always really good at pubs.
Yeah.
And I do love a little mushy pea within the fish and
mushy
chips.
Mushy peas is good it's with not fish bad. And chips. Yeah.
Yeah. We don't do that here at pubs or anything. Yeah. But at the UK, it's a staple and it's good. Yeah.
A fresher.
And I tell you what, fucking good tartare sauce makes a difference as well. I can't stand home. Like,
some store bought one is store-bought
tartare.
Really tangy.
Yeah. And it's got, too
it's like,
sweet
like,
as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah. You feel like it's got heaps of sugar, heaps of vinegar to balance out the sugar, and it's kind of poor quality vinegar. And it's got a weird like
tartare sauce. Funky tang. We had it at the Illawarra the other day. I got pretty good fish and chips.
Oh yeah, that was great.
Was good.
Actually.
Yeah, it was good fish and chips. A fucking generous portion too. Yeah. Hotel there, Illawarra on Kira Street.
Wollongong. Down in Berkeley, Aisha's.
Okay, Aisha's.
Good. We used to get because they're right on the lake, so we used to go down there and get Illawarra mullet.
Oh yeah,
which is like $3 a kilo. It was great.
Can you get it anymore still?
Certain time of year they'll have heaps down there, and it's really good, really underrated fish around here. And it, like I said, it's like $3 a kilo.
It's so good,
ludicrous.
But the thing that made the difference on that homemade tartare sauce was like generous on the dill. I really enjoyed having like
I remember you commenting on the dill.
A good bit of dill in that tartare was. I just love dill. Dill's good. Good.
Yeah, I'm not herb. Dill wouldn't be a game changer for me if it wasn't there. I just think like plenty of cornichons.
Yeah.
Like, and fairly chunky.
You want
it really
chunky.
Oh, on that bite. Yeah.
They do it well. They do it well in the UK.
But I think it's the fish. In the UK, it's cod.
Cod.
Or it was until it got very expensive. A lot of places have changed to...
Pollock.
Pollock. That was it. I almost forgot.
I caught a pollock.
Did you?
In the Isle of Skye, yeah. Oh, I had my rod with me. And
pollock, very good.
I caught a pollock.
Yeah. I think some of the best fish chips I have came from pollock.
Love it.
And it's thicker, so therefore I think you can cook the batter more and keep the fish in case.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's like the thickness of the fish versus thickness of the batter versus temperature of the oil, like coefficient.
Mm.
We need to get that right when we do our testing.
Yeah, like hake is also good for that.
Hake,
very good fish and chip, fish and chip shop chip fish Fish chop.
Chip chop. Chip.
Chip chop fish.
All right, we're going to leave it there, Simon. But let's finish by sort of talking a little bit about what we're hoping to do with the podcast in 2021, because we basically, like, Simon and I had a meeting about the podcast, and we kind of decided, look, if we just keep doing it how we're doing it, which is just keep releasing episodes and not actually improving it, like, so what we're doing now is great and we love doing it, talking to these great chefs, talking to these great producers, sharing stories, and both you and I really, really enjoy it. But you and I both being ambitious people and wanting to do something quite special with this podcast, it's like we're thinking about how we can make it bigger and better. So the idea of doing this video content is a part of that, is just to start releasing some video content to hopefully get people more engaged with the podcast. And then the second part is doing other types of video content as well. So we were talking about reviewing things like fish and chips and bakeries and pies and stuff like that. So we might do a bit of reviewing coming up as well.
Yeah.
Just continue with the podcast. So there's going to be more information to come, but like what we'd ideally like to get to is to start making a bit more cash out of this podcast so we can actually justify spending as much time as we want to doing this podcast, because we really love doing it and we hope the people out there love it as well. Like, we have feedback from people saying that they really like the podcast. So stay tuned for some info on that sort of stuff, because if we can just scratch together a little bit of money so we can actually put the time into it that it deserves, so, both of us having busy schedules, we've got a chef and a guy.
Sponsors, products.
So that's all
advertising.
To come.
Advertising.
Again, anyone out there, like if you've got anything you want us to discuss, or if you want to come on the podcast yourself, just like hit us up via email or Instagram.
If you want to come on Spruik what you're doing, Spruik your product.
Yeah.
Well, let us send us something and we'll review it.
That's it.
Honestly.
All right. Bigger and better things to come for 2021. Yeah. That's your first Small Bites episode of the year. We've got lots of good ones coming out. We're doing Danielle Alvarez next week. And we've got a few more things on the go as well. So, it's a good one, Simon.
In the bank.
Thanks for listening. Hello, dear listeners. Steph here. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of The Food Fight. If you want to get in touch with us, it's at The Food Fight Podcast on Instagram or thefoodfightpodcast@gmail.com. We want to hear from you and we want to talk to you. Please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. That really helps. If you want to hit me up, it's quicksandfood.com or at quicksandfood on Instagram. And if you want to get in touch with Simon, it's simon_evans_TBD on Instagram. Thanks so much for tuning in and we'll catch you again with another episode.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.